You're about to enjoy TryHards, courtesy of MTGCast.com. If you enjoy TryHards or anything else supplied by MTGCast, please make a donation. Whether it's recurring or one time, you can help offset the very real overhead of bringing you the best podcasts in magic every week. MTGCast at MTGCast.com. I try not to play Commander with people I like.
What is up with quad sleeve? Is this a thing that I'm just not ever heard of before?
Anybody who wants a ban is basically saying, I don't want to play against a skill-intensive deck.
Maybe the most exciting mechanic I can think of in the last couple sets at least.
Well, the old guy contingent is finally being served.
You need to go back to your parents' basement. That's all I got to say.
No fallout from Vegas for us, mostly because we weren't able to travel. But that's all right. It's another chance for us to get together for TryHards. I'm Sean Seacrest, he's Brian Tibbetts, and he's Matt Hurley. Welcome to episode 57. We get it started with What Are You Drinking? Brian, I know you've got something you've been just chomping at the bit to tell us about, so let's get started. What are you drinking?
I got to give you a little background on this. So we had some people over on Friday night for kind of the summer kickoff and things, and I had known that this beverage was coming to the party. I was like, oh, that's fine, whatever. You people can be silly and whatnot. After it showed up, I kind of got roped into it. It was the thing where someone said, hey, Brian, you going to have one? I said, no. And they said, I dare you to have it on the TryHards cast under the What Are You Drinking segment. And I was like, how can I say no to that? So, guys, I'm drinking limited release Zima from 1995.
Oh, my God.
I'm back in, like, junior year of college, and I didn't drink it then, and there's a real good reason for that, and I'm kind of choking this one down, but I am drinking it. So I'm drinking the clear malt beverage with refreshing citrus aftertaste, choking it down.
Did you crush up a Jolly Rancher and put it in there, too?
I just can't wait to get to the bottom of this so I can run to the beer fridge and get one of my cold Deschutes over there. So, yeah.
That sounds like a better choice. All right, congratulations on taking them up on the challenge. Matt, what are you drinking?
I am actually drinking I got the bottle here, an Undercover Shutdown Ale from Lagunitas, and it's pretty damn good. Brian, Lord walked in yesterday, I believe it was, and she goes, you know what we have at Total Wine now? And I'm like, what? And she goes, Zima, it's a special re-release. We had this conversation this weekend. I'm like, what was it you also put in there? She goes, oh, we got Jolly Rancher, so you can right next to it.
I'm serious. I really cannot understand why suddenly we're re-releasing this now. I mean, it's 2017. Why, you know, what happened? But hey.
Why did they re-release, what was that, Ectoplasm High C or whatever it was? Why are they remaking good movies? They just can't come up with original right now.
Next week, if I'm drinking Crystal Pepsi, I need you to call somebody for some help. There needs to be an intervention. That's all I got to say.
I'll just think you're shopping in the bargain bin and knock Matt out of the way for a minute. You're drinking the Crystal Pepsi. We were at a wedding over the weekend and stopped at a charity event in between, and they were selling the Zima. So I was watching the girls put the Jolly Ranchers in it. I couldn't be more surprised right now that that's what Brian's drinking on the cast tonight. I'm back with Toppling Goliath. I've got a leftover from Father's Day yesterday. Had a chance to get together with some buddies of mine. One of the Golden Nugget IPAs. So that's delicious here in the office this evening. What magic did we play? I'll go first because mine's pretty short. I read the calendar wrong for F&M at the LGS. And I thought it was Modern this last week. Brian sent me his list. And it was not. It was 1v1 Commander. And when I was approached by one of the guys at the shop, hey, you're going to be there, right? I said, I try not to play Commander with people I like, much less you people at the shop. So, no, I won't be there. My Padawan, Rachel, ended up coming over. We did some Modern testing for her going into this Friday, in which it will be Modern. And yes, Brian, I'll be rolling out your deck. So I'm looking forward to that. Got to play with the trainee a bit. And that was really my week in Magic. Matt, what'd you do with Magic this week?
I played a couple of matches online. Play two with the Bant taking turns. This was Ali Antrazi's list that he wrote about on Gathering Magic. Out of my two matches, I think I went 2-3, and almost all of mine were due to timing out. That deck is slow as slow can be. I mean, it involves a lot of clicking. involves a lot of, there's a lot of decisions there, but the deck is inherently powerful. There's a few things I might change, like a couple here and there, but I think I'm going to go ahead and sleeve that up and play that. I had Brian send me some cards last week so I could actually sleeve that up. And then the other deck I was playing was actually the Grand Architect deck that was seen on camera and did fairly well
blue
in the
steel.
Tournament over the weekend.
Yeah, the Blue Steel deck.
Yeah, the Blue Steel as they're calling
sweet.
It now.
That looked really sweet, yeah.
I will tell you this. I played one match with it, and I watched several people play matches with it. I think Corbin Hostler did it, and somebody else did it. And here's my big issue with it. It reminds me a lot of Belcher and Legacy. It's not as fast as Belcher. Like, you just don't get those random turn one, but it is a glass cannon deck, if there ever is one. I mean, it's got a lot of reach to it, but it's very hard to not run out of gas and just kind of stall out.
Brian, what'd you do with Magic this week?
I did get down to the shop and played Eldrazi Tron for the second week in a row, which was actually really fun. Funny, I was expecting to see all kinds of different decks, and there was not a lot of people down at the shop. We had to kind of scrape around just to get the thing to fire. Round one, I beat Zombies in three games. That deck can kind of come out of nowhere. I was playing a little loose there, and it was kind of like, oops, that could have gone really, really south. But ended up getting there on the back of Thought Knots here for sure. Round two, I played the Eldrazi Tron Mirror. This is the guy who went from 1 week playing the Zoo deck, the Bushwhacker. And I was like, listen, dude, quit copycatting me. That was a frustrating match because he got to Karn earlier than I did. And that's just game. If he Karns first, you know, it's kind of hard to come back from that. So I gave it my best shot. Round three, I played a black-green Eldrazi match, which was really fun. There's a lot of play to that deck. There's, you know, the Ancient Stirrings, the removal spells and things like that. It was pretty fun. Made it a good matchup, and I got there. So finished 2-1. I think I'd roll it out again. I'm just learning certain things to do all the time. Like, you always play Expedition Map over Mindstone. There's really no reason not to, when to get out Walking Ballista, when not to in certain matchups. So I'm just kind of refining it. But it's been a fun deck to play. I am enjoying it still.
Those were just some of the decks that were on display at Vegas over the weekend. The first time it's been done, 3 GPs at the same location running over the same event weekend. Now, they fussed with time a little bit, not quite Doctor Who style, but they started it on a Thursday. And boy, I had some time off on Thursday. I think that should become a thing, guys. I really enjoyed getting up and watching Legacy on a Thursday afternoon. The Legacy Crown was eventually taken down by Andrew Calderon, 2,656 players, and it was Death and Taxes in the hands of Calderon over John Semyon on Blue Red Delver in the finals. This was a bit surprising to me, guys. All of the variants of Delver that made it to this top 8. 2 Grixis Delver, 1 traditional Rug Delver, the Blue Red that was in the finals, and then you had a Death and Taxes, a Sneak and Show of Lands, and a 4-color Leovold. That seems to be quickly becoming Legacy's new value deck, and it's a whole lot of fun to play. We, of course, played a Leovold strategy when we were down in Louisville at the beginning of the year. Brian, was there anything that stood out to you from this, other than the fact that Black-Red Reanimator seemed to be the talk of the tournament for a while and then didn't put anybody in the top 8?
No, I'm with you. I was shocked at how many Delver decks made top 8. What is it, 4?
Yeah,
Delver decks in the top 8, and no combo deck, really. I mean, there was a lands deck. I don't even know how you categorize lands, but...
Yeah, you had lands, and you had one Sneak and Show.
And one Sneak and Show, that's correct. But I was very, very surprised not to see Storm. I thought in a Miracles-less world, and I know that there were some Miracles decks running around, but not of the power level of those that contain top. I was very, very surprised not to see more Storm in either the 1-8 or the 9-16. That was very, very surprising. And I think the Delver decks that were in there, guys, were really lean. The Blue-Red Delver, I think, only runs 16 lands. I know the Teemer Delver or the Rug Delver is only running 18 lands. And so those are some really fast, lean strategies. And that was very, very surprising to me. I love those lists. I think they're great. I think they've been tuned very well, especially the Blue-Red Delver list. That's a list I would like to get my hands on. But when I was watching Lucas Blohun play this on camera, he was playing a Grixis Control list, and he was masterfully playing it and just having a little bit more mid-range strategy, Kolaghan's Commands and the Young Pyromancers with Cabal Therapy. I thought that was an amazing deck choice, and yet he didn't even make top 16. So, you know, it was one of those things where just kind of petered out in the, got run over by some of those faster decks in the late, late rounds. Not take anything away from him, though, because he's still a great player. I don't know, Hurley, were you surprised not to see more kind of combo-oriented decks? Or were you expecting Delver to kind of hold the crown as, you know, best creature in Legacy?
A big portion of it is because of all the blue that's running around in all these decks. You know, most of these run main deck discard of some type. And then most of them are running the, you know, the Daze package or the, you know, Force of Will, Spell Pierce package. So it's not surprising to me that the combo decks were kind of nowhere to be seen. And this is kind of how I expected it to shake out. The one big one I was surprised at was like the Death Shadow deck that sneaked up there. I don't know what place he ended up at, but it was pretty interesting. Did you guys get to see that one?
Not in Legacy, no.
I was like, man, that's going deep. I enjoy seeing this in Legacy because there was a decent variety of, even though there were a lot of Delver decks, there was a decent variety of Delver decks. There were some people were... Definitely put on their brewing hats a little bit and change, you know, some cards here and there, like adding Engineered Explosives main deck. You know, the Blade style decks, they've kind of come back as well. And a lot of them are running two main deck Council's Judgment as well now. So, you know, this is kind of the ground floor of Legacy. And I think it's going to develop definitely a little bit moving forward from here.
Do you guys think that the Miracles lists running Portent and Predict have any legs going forward? I mean, Sam Raukes, who's been a Miracles master for ages, 9-0'd day one, kind of faltered in the later rounds. But do you think that says that there's something there, that this deck can still survive without top, or is this just kind of the flash in the pan?
I'm not convinced. I've seen them running. They definitely have you know, some powerful things going on, but it's going to be like another deck into the mix. It's not going to, you know, every once in a while you'll see one probably top 8, and you know, you'll see probably one of them in top 16 in all the tournaments moving forward, but it's not going to be the powerhouse that Miracles used to be.
I think the new Miracles lists will tell you who the true masters are. I think Raukes, I think of BBD, I think certainly if Ordsman Joe Lossette wants to continue with it, that the power is there for those who are skilled enough to wield it. I think by taking away top, you took away the easy button, and so you're not going to see the results from the middling Miracles players who were only really accessing the power of top in order to get those wins. So that's kind of coming down on both sides of the fence, but I think its percentage of the metagame is going to plummet. But those masters who are on top of the deck, I think they can still produce results with it.
I think there is something there. I was maybe a little poo-pooing kind of, you know, Miracles is dead. I think a lot of people were, but to do that at a GP, taking out, you know, what some people would consider the heart of the deck or the glue of the deck, and still put up those kind of numbers, seems to me that there's something there, that this deck might not be in its final tuned stages, but we may see a return to Miracles sometime in the future. I know that doesn't make everybody happy, but at the same time, if a deck can continue being effective after suffering through a ban, that just goes to show you that that's probably the skill level of the player and not just that the deck is overpowered.
Speaking of skill level, it was certainly on display in the limited portion. Tiago Saporito showed off his skills in taking down that trophy over the weekend. And then it was on to Modern. 3,264 for the Modern GP main event. It was Manny Devondi on Affinity taking down Tho Mary on Mono White Hate Bears. I think I was more surprised that there were two distinct Hate Bear decks in the Modern Top 8 than I was that half the Legacy top 8 was Delver. Affinity had 3 of the final 8 in Modern. Affinity's been primed for a comeback in my position. Mono White Hate Bears, Green White Hate Bears, Eldrazi Tron, Blue Black Taking Turns, and Naya Burn were your top 8 in Modern. The thing that stood out to me on this one wasn't any of the decks, but was in fact the way one of the decks was played. Did you guys see Daniel Wong in his quad-sleeved Blue Black Taking Turns deck?
No, I saw it, and if you could find Daniel Wong from behind his stack of cards, I could definitely see him playing it. But for the love of God, I can't imagine he doesn't have carpal tunnel syndrome now. What is up with quad sleeve? Is this a thing that I'm just not ever heard of before? I guess I don't understand why quad sleeve, and is this just a new way to just completely protect your cards and dunk them underwater.
I don't know, but I think there should have been a penalty involved for doing that. He was kind of giggling while he was shuffling, and the match I saw on camera was against Ari Lax, I believe, and Ari was laughing as well. So I just hope this isn't the new thing. As for the play on the table, Hurley, you've been getting a little bit more into modern, so I want to start with you, and we'll end with our modern aficionado in Brian. Affinity, I mentioned I thought it was prime for a comeback. I was not surprised to see it get three decks in the top eight. And once it did that, to me, this kind of announced, we're here again. Start putting the appropriate hate in your sideboard.
Sean, you hit the nail on the head there. Was reading a lot that somebody equated Affinity to Reanimator or Dredge in Legacy. Hey, you know what? We forgot to pack our the Stony Silences. Now, look, Affinity put a couple up there. It's not going to be any good for about the next 2 months.
Brian, what'd you think of when you saw this continue to play out across the top eight that was suddenly Affinity and Hate Bear heavy?
Yeah, Affinity and Hate Bear heavy. I was just kind of thinking to myself, if we have a GP Legacy that is won by Death and Taxes, and then if we have a modern GP that is won by a Hate Bears deck, that's just going to seem really, really strange to me. So I'm kind of glad that Hate Bears didn't take down both of those. I saw enough Stony Silence played, but I feel like Affinity is such a resilient deck that it can still, you know, without activating abilities of artifacts, you can just, if you've already got your artifacts on the board, you're just turning them sideways and swinging, and I think that's what that deck does really, really well. Yes, of course, an early Stony Silence can really foil Affinity's game plan, but if Affinity gets out ahead, that's what Modern does really, really well, is play fast. And so I think that's why, Sean, you were right to say three decks in the top eight is not a surprise whatsoever. I don't know how much more you can sideboard against Affinity. I mean, how many more sideboard cards and slots you want to bring in against just that deck? Because you still have to, you know, if you take something out against Death Shadow and, you know, that hoses you, and, you know, you still got to draw those sideboard cards, guys. It's not like it's a done deal. If you, you know, draw it and play it, they can still get around it. But you might not even see it. You got to have a game plan going forward if you're going to have your main 60 or so. I like Affinity. It's a fun deck to play against. It's a fun deck to play around and see, you know, how you can interact with it. Am I really happy that we didn't have, like, talking about, like, all mono white or, God forbid, green white aggro taking down a modern GP?
So, Brian, you mentioned sideboard cards. That is a really good lead into something I wanted to talk about. Somebody locally that plays modern said, oh, look, it was Death Shadow was like 32%, I think it was, of the, I don't know if it was day two, but he used that. He goes, so when can we expect a Death Shadow ban? It started up a discussion, to put it nicely. Here is my issue, this is what I posted. I said, look, Death Shadow, it reminds me of a legacy deck. It's a skill intensive. I wouldn't say as autopilot as it is. I feel like it's a very skill intensive deck. And it reminds me of a legacy deck because you win with Death Shadow, especially Grixis, through skill. You don't win through, you know, your opponent's mistakes. And there's no sideboard cards that just automatically hose all of Death Shadow like there is for a lot of these other decks. So I brought that up and they're like, well, that doesn't make any sense. I'm like, no. And I explained it even more. I said, you know, anybody who wants a Death Shadow ban, yes, Stubborn Denial is annoying as hell to play against. Maybe it's a little too good, but anybody who wants a ban is basically saying, I don't want to play against a skill-intensive deck. The deck is very good. The deck is probably one of the best decks to play in Modern, but it's a very skill-intensive deck. You can't just hand that, you know, you couldn't just hand that to Rachel and say, hey, play this deck. It would definitely be a learning curve on where it needs to go. And that sounds odd to say on a non-control style deck or non-combo deck. Overall, I think that deck plays the way that probably Modern should play versus, you know, the way that it plays where it's just a sideboard format. But the only card that I would even debate in there is maybe like Stubborn Denial being a bit too powerful. I mean, I think it's a great deck, and I'm glad to see that it doesn't fold to just, you know, just terrible sideboard hate.
For a format that is considered an eternal format, to have the best deck be one that essentially plays fair and has to win in the red zone with what's frankly a pretty honest creature for eternal formats, I think if it's the best deck in Modern's in a really good spot right now, Brian.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. That's the thing. I think I've been arguing this for the past few months is the variety of decks that you see. And it is, of course, the top eight is the top eight. But when you start looking at the 9 through 32 deck lists, you see a lot of the Death Shadow decks in there. The Grixis deck is really, really fun. It does do some broken things, but it only does it like on a fair axis, if that makes any sense. I feel like the cost that the player has to spend to do the broken things is really, really good comparatively for what you're getting. And, you know, when you have like a 5-5 or a 6-6 Death Shadow, it can still get fatal pushed. It still can get blocked by a Lingering Souls token. I mean, there's certain drawbacks to this. It can also just run over you if you have no way to deal with it. But it does have just kind of a fair game plan going forward, and it's up to the pilot to make sure they understand kind of when to deploy their threats. And I think that's what it comes down to. There's so many different decks out there. Sean, did you see that there was a black-white smallpox deck that took 12th at the GP?
Oh, yeah. That black-white smallpox deck has been hanging out in Modern for a little while, and I think it's really got some legs. So it'll be interesting to see where that goes going forward. And I think Modern, when you have a deck that's as linear as the Sultai Death Shadow deck. And I say that not in that the play pattern is linear, but the win pattern is linear. They're going to win with Death Shadow, or they're going to win with a couple of things along the way. Maybe a Gurmag Angler, maybe a Tassiger, but you know they have to get in the red zone. That opens up some other brewing space, and you can leverage those features of their deck against them. That's where the Pox strategy sort of comes into play, where you can start taking those two-for-ones and hitting the mana resources on a deck that plays as light as the Death Shadows decks do is a real cost to having that resource taken away, as they want to try to be as land light as possible while also getting to a point where they can Snapcaster cast some things or cast Kolaghan's Command. So their resources and how you can manage them on the other side are a very real part of that matchup. So I think those things will all be interesting as the Modern metagame continues to develop. Guys, we usually just talk about coverage when it comes to the Pro Tour, but I want to talk a little bit about coverage because of the historic nature of this GP in Vegas. I thought it was very good for the most part. I thought Channel Fireball put it together well. I thought that Marshall and all of the commentators, Huey, did a great job as he went Iron Man over the 4 days. LSV came ready with a full bandolier of bad puns. So, you know, everybody seemed ready to go. But one of the things that stood out to me was I really enjoyed the time-shifted matches that they did. I think they have some improvements that can be made on how they handled their downtime and so on and so forth. But that's on the production side. Seeing more magic is always good. And seeing more magic was also a bit of the controversy in the comment section. Now, I know reading the comment section in Twitch is like voluntarily taking a hot poker to your own brain, but it was there nonetheless, and I found myself reading through some of it. The community seemed divided over the use of the first couple rounds of each tournament to focus on non-professional level play. Let's just put it that way. This stood out in Modern when in the first round they featured Dana Fisher, the little six-year-old girl who was playing either her second or third GP. She came in the day wanting a winning record, and she won her last round in round 9 to go 5-4, and she was playing Modern Elves, and she just wrecked the guy on camera in round 1. He was playing Boros Burn, and Elves just took care of him in short order. And then it was in round 2, Cassius Marsh, who was featured. He was playing a Blue Moon deck. He is an outside linebacker for the Seattle Seahawks. Huge Magic fan. Many of his tattoos that he has are Magic-inspired or Magic-related. He didn't do so well in that round, as he got eaten up by Affinity, and he ended up dropping in the tournament after getting just 3 points along the way. But I think, especially in the rounds where you don't have the big names in because of buys and so forth, Brian, that using the coverage to bring to light these kinds of stories and the breadth and depth of people who play Magic, I think it's 100% upside.
Absolutely. If we can't celebrate a six-year-old there having a winning record at a GP, I mean, how heartless can we be? The other thing along that line was kind of the tribute to the kind of the Father's Day angle that was going on there. They had a lot of fathers there with their kids. I know one father and daughter were doing kind of a two-headed giant thing, which just was cute as hell. If you just saw the pictures online of them kind of talking over cards and things like that, that kind of stuff, that's what makes Magic magic. This is something, as you well know, I'm passing down to my daughter. I hope she gets into it as much as I have. But yeah, we can't just concentrate on, you know, smashing somebody's face with the best deck and seeing this matchup on camera all the time and this other deck tech and all the technical stuff about this and how did you sideboard. We kind of lose the fact that this is still a game. And to go ahead and do the non-competitive Magic side is absolutely where Wizards needs to be, especially when you've got focusing on things like HasCon coming up, which is supposed to be very family-oriented. You've got a lot of things that are geared toward casual play. You cannot alienate that audience. So Wizards was right on doing that, and I hope they continue doing that. They should not take any guff from the Twitch crowd, for sure.
Matt, what'd you think of the coverage this weekend? Because it took on a little bit of a different tone at different times.
Coverage was excellent. Outside, those stupid music and the sound effects they had on the dead time on the commercials between were so depressing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they just need to alter that dead time there. They had a good idea. I did kind of like the Keeper or Ship, I think it was.
The Keeper, yeah. Mole with Pascal Maynard.
Those were pretty cool. The sound just made it like me not want to watch it. I'm not saying you need to play like something super upbeat, but you just need to maybe have a voiceover doing it or have something interactive where it's not just like the depressing, like, oh my gosh, I've got the lights off, I'm watching a horror movie type of sound that is going on with it. I am with you guys as well. I think that anybody who was about the featuring a 7-year or a, yeah, 6-year-old or 7-year-old, however old she was, you need to go back to your parents' basement. That's all I got to say, because this is exactly the same thing as when you know, they were complaining about getting the special invites to special streamers. You need to expand out your horizons. And I know that if, and Brian, you can back me up on this, but I can imagine that if I had a child that said, hey, mom or dad or whatever, I want to watch Magic on Twitch. You know, somebody told me about it down at the shop and they played Magic and I had no idea what it was. If I flipped it on, I saw a 6-year-old playing, I'd be like, all right, let's see what we got here. You know, if I saw a bunch of stinky closet-dwelling nerds playing it exclusively, I'd be like, I don't know what's going on here. So I don't think so. You just need to expand that out. And anybody who complains about that, just you don't understand. You don't understand marketing. You don't understand business.
The other thing, and this was just kind of a shout out to the fanboy in me, I think. I got kind of agog. I think I might have uttered a exclamation or something when I first saw the Bellagio fountains, and then they had the True Name Nemesis.
I enjoyed that as well.
Yeah.
Oh, man, I thought that was great. And then they did the iconic Las Vegas sign, and then, you know, the Death Shadow in the background. That I thought that was produced really, really well. So shout out to Wizards. They did a great job on that.
Yeah, it was really enjoyable to see all that magic over the weekend. That's the tournament news. Tournament's coming up this weekend. Team Limited GPs in the Mistake by the Lake, Cleveland, and Sydney, Australia. So you have a chance to catch either one of those. It is Team Limited this weekend. Guys, we kick off our news with what we now know about Hour of Devastation. Since we cast it last, Wizards has put out the official mechanics article for Hour of Devastation. We know that Exert and Cycling will be coming back. The new ones are Eternalize and Afflict. Of these, I think Afflict is going to be very interesting, and we're going to talk about this in 3 minutes to Blue. But Matt, has there been one of the new mechanic keywords that has caught your eye so far?
Afflict looks really cool. I think that's a great way for these aggro decks to kind of get some reach. They have this 2-2 for 2 that's a zombie jackal warrior with Afflict 1. You know, I'm assuming that they're going to have like Afflict 3, Afflict 2, that type of thing. Maybe not Afflict 3. That'd be a little powerful. But I think that's really cool. I think that's a unique mechanic. The Eternalize, essentially exile it from from your graveyard, put a copy of it, you know, that's a 4-4 black zombie human cleric into, which I assume it'll be zombie plus the other two creature types. I really like that one. I think that's a unique one. But again, that's a pain in the butt for the control decks to handle. The one I really liked, the desert theme that they're having. I mean, I think that's super cool. I hope that they have desert matters. And I was actually waiting for the, jokingly, I was waiting for the buyout to happen on Camel from Arabian Nights.
Maybe they need to go back and zombify a camel They could be escorting them into the afterworld there that the God Pharaoh seems to be ruling over. Brian, new mechanics jumping out to you?
Afflict overall is absolutely the one that I'm really, really excited about. That one looks to be maybe the most exciting mechanic I can think of in the last, I don't know, couple sets at least, for sure. The Eternalize, I think, is a little bit of a play on the mummification one from Amonkhet. That just kind of seems like a little bit of a rift on that. Not too excited about the new cycling lands. I know the cycling lands kind of made their, the rare ones, you know, made their appearance in Amonkhet. And I think they're going to be good, but these that come into play tapped, not really looking forward to that. Overall, I'm very curious just to see how the rest of the cards play out, because I think we have some really, really strong power coming out of here.
Yeah, it should be interesting. As we get more and more of the set, we'll start to talk more about it here on Tryhards. Guys, other news came out this week. They did a really cute video shoot in which Maru got to act all energetic and wild, you know, as he's wont to do, announcing the upcoming releases for Magic. Do we need a third Unset? This is something we've talked about on the show before, Hurley. Unstable has been announced. Unless they find a new sweet way to give us the full art lands that the Unsets, let's be honest, are known for being their lasting contribution, I'm kind of meh on this one. What about you?
Yeah, I am too. I didn't get to play the first two. I don't know. I'm like, really? Like, what am I going to do? And that's, unfortunately, that's the competitive player in my heart that I'm like, what does this really give me? I'll try it out. Maybe it's good. Maybe it's not. I just hope they didn't spend a lot of, I guess, development time. You know, maybe they ripped too many people away from the development team that developed this Unset, and that's because, and that's why, you know, the all these bad cards have snuck through.
I would hate to see them admit to that. Matt, is there a short, very short, Cliff's Notes version of a history of Unsets financially? I mean, should people be looking at this as an opportunity, or is this just something that is almost unpredictable?
The big ones you want to look at is stuff that's going to be in Cube. And so we had, I think it was Lore Broker from Conspiracy that you drafted another pack. That was big within the Cube community. So any of those foils are going to be fantastic. Whatever special they do with special things they do with the lands are going to be great. And then the third thing you have to look at is if there's any powerful artists that do any of these. So like any of the big names like Therese Nielsen, anything like that, that get that become foil, you know, you need to look at the foil ones too. So other than that, I mean, these are generally, from what I understand, generally worthless.
All right, we'll keep an eye on that as Unstable has been announced. They also announced a return to Magic's roots. That's right. I know we've called for this before on the show. The old guy contingent is finally being served. Brian, we're going back to Dominaria, back where it all started. And I already know what I want out of this set. If it's going to be a nod to the older crowd in the history of Magic, I want all my cards from the new expansion to have the old card frame.
Oh, I think you're wishing up the wrong tree there. However, how cool would that be if they just kind of, you know, threw a monkey wrench into it and just kind of made everybody deal with the old card frames for a while? I think that would be pretty sweet.
On top of Dominaria coming back around, they also announced a little bit more about the world of Ixalan. It's going to be, yes, get ready to have both of the child sides of your brain stimulated simultaneously, pirates and dinosaurs. Now, we can all get on board with at least one, if not both of those. And Matt, this seems to be something that's got people excited, and we haven't even seen Hour of Devastation yet.
I made the joke, I think it was on Twitter, actually. I made the joke that these aren't childish at all because they don't have lasers on their heads. So, I don't know. I mean, I hope they don't go too ridiculous with this for Ixalan. I think they missed a big, big, big opportunity with going back to Dominaria. And what I mean when I say they missed it, they could have, you know, I think I mentioned this on the show maybe, you know, a dozen times. They could have had the most powerful planeswalker to ever exist collecting Dominarian artifacts and then put little spoilers, you know, on the invocations to say, you know, you thought all of Dominaria is destroyed. Well, are you just not looking in the right places type of, you know, flavor text and stuff like that? Just so people would be like, ooh, yeah, you know, like what's going to happen? Are we going back to Dominaria? What's going on? I have mixed feelings about what they're going to do when they get there, because I think that they still want to stay away from what they've always said. They want to stay away from, you know, like land war elves. they want to stay away from that. They want to do all this other stuff, and hoping that they actually go back and do a true Dominaria and don't do like in as part of the New World Order type of thing and try to keep it where it was, you know, 20 years ago.
Should be interesting to see how they play that out. Llanowar Elves are going to be sidelined for two reasons. One, they say they want to stay away from that sort of card naming type, and also they don't want to do one mana accelerators anymore. So it's in double secret probation right now. Llanowar Elves thinks it's getting off the bench for Dominaria. That's been the big news this week, and that's going to take us actually across the lobby. You didn't know we were riding the tram to the elevator that whole time. Well, it's actually being pulled by dinosaurs from Ixalan, so that's why we got here so quickly. Brings us up to this week's In the Elevator on Tryhards. Matt, Glorybound Initiate might be bringing some glory to my wallet. What's going on here?
With the banning of Marvel, I think that this card has a lot of room to actually increase in price. I think it could go over to kind of a staple in a lot of these decks. It's currently, you can find them under $1.50, and I think as long as you trade for them, I trade for them now. I mean, this could easily be, you know, a $4 card or so. You don't want to be stuck holding the bag when you need to spend, you know, $20. I wouldn't say go deep on them, but I would say definitely they're going to be a staple, a two-drop staple in any of the white decks moving forward.
Glorybound Initiate in the elevator this week. Matt's pick on Tryhards. That brings us up to 3 minutes to brew. It's time to walk out one of the new mechanics from the upcoming Hour of Devastation. I'm excited about this one, Brian. Tell us about this week's 3 minutes to brew.
Wildfire Eternal, Zombie Jackal Cleric, 1 red and 3 other. It's a 1/4 with Afflict 4. If you're not familiar with Afflict, whenever this creature becomes blocked, defending player loses 4 life. Whenever Wildfire Eternal attacks and isn't blocked, you may cast an instant or sorcery card from your hand without paying its mana cost. Guys, there's a lot of text to unpack on this card. Sean, I'm going to start with you. Where do you see Wildfire Eternal showing up and in what format?
The fact that it's a 1-1 doesn't bother me at all, because with Afflict 4, it functions in almost every way as a 4-4 for 4 with upside. And that upside being that it will torment your opponent each turn on whether or not to block based on what you could have in your hand. I don't think you need on a creature that's going to do a 4 damage if it's blocked or give you a free spell if it's not. I don't think you need to try and break the bank with every sensational over-the-top sorcery. I think just getting a steady stream of value off this is going to be excellent. So whether it's a little bit of burn or a little bit of card selection or maybe a way to play an extra piece of removal that turn to take out one of your opponent's creatures, just the incremental advantage to playing free spells off of an aggressive creature, I think is going to be worth it. There's a little bit of a red-green aggro deck floating around in Standard right now, and you also have the Rug Energy deck. I think they're going to try this first there because the upside with the free spells is real, but it wouldn't surprise me if this settled in somewhere in a format like Modern to where the 4-butt is worthwhile, Lightning Bolt and other things, but you also have the more powerful potential instants and sorceries to access. So I'm excited by this card, and I think it's going to be really good. And the fact that we're already seeing Afflict 4 tells me that Wizards isn't going to be shy about moving that Afflict number up, and that's to where it can really make this card shine, I think.
Hurley, what about you? Are you as high on this card as Sean is?
You know, it's a little expensive. I'm not sure the deck it wants to go in, if there's going to be like a burn deck or what the deck is, but I see it as a very, very powerful card. Unless I'm mistaken, on the Standard side of things, I don't think we have an unblockable card except for the 2-drop that you tap and target creature with power 2 or less gets unblockable this turn. Putting that into a burn deck, I think that this dodges your Fatal Pushes, which is a big removal spell right now. Once the Grass of Darkness goes away, I don't think we're going to have another amazing removal spell like that for a while. I'm definitely a fan. I think it's going to be definitely no more than like a 2-of. Maybe you're never going to see a playset. It's just a bit too expensive for that, and a bit too underwhelming.
It is a little high on the casting, but I think right where it should be probably for everything that it can do, because there's a lot of brewing space available with this card. The thing that gets me about this is whenever Wildfire Eternal attacks and isn't blocked, It doesn't say it has to deal combat damage to the opposing player, which I find fascinating, because that instant or sorcery card could be a pump spell. It could be all kinds of things. You can still sacrifice it, you know, beforehand. It is going to still trigger the casting of the instant or the sorcery. And there's some very, very powerful instants and sorceries in standard right now, and especially in modern, that we could definitely look at. And that would be creeping into modern, I would say, as a one of in a deck. But in standard, casting a Glimmer of Genius for free, I mean, you're in torrential Gearhulk territory there and still getting mega value off this. It's kind of like Goblin Darkdwellers, only better. And so for only one red, I think this has a lot of possibilities. So I'm looking forward to this in Hour of Devastation.
So, Brian, you mentioned that, and I'm actually glad you did, as long as it's not blocked. So if I'm reading the card correctly, it could actually be unblocked, and then I use that spell trigger before damage is dealt to either pump it or to potentially give it something that will give it an advantage since it's unblocked.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. It's just that. That's going to trigger when your opponent says no blocks. Then you've got all kinds of space to do whatever you want to do. You can cast that instant or sorcery, which you normally couldn't cast a sorcery at that time. And there's probably some things happening right there that could really, really open up some gameplay. That looks like it could be a lot of fun. And wouldn't this card just be dumb in limited formats? I mean, if I open this in a sealed pool, I'm going to be just giggling. And I probably won't show it to anybody, but I'll just be giggling even when I shuffle up my deck.
Wildfire Eternal on this week's 3 Minutes to Brew. That brings us toward the end of the show, where we try to figure out if we got better at Magic this week. I know Rachel said to me, "You're telling me I'm not as good as a 6-year-old?" I said, "That 6-year-old played elves and was able to beat Burn. You weren't able to do either of those things the last time we played." And she began pouting a bit. You never know just how good Dana Fisher is going to grow up to be. What I did this week was read. I read PVDDR's article, 8 Ways to Get Virtual Card Advantage. This went up this week. We all know about the simplest terms of card advantage. A 2-for-1, say on a removal spell or a sweeper. You're able to brainstorm and turn that one card into multiple options. But there are other philosophies and other ways to generate card advantage, in air quotes. So I think check out that article from PVDDR on Channel Fireball's site. 8 Ways to Generate Virtual Card Advantage. Really eye-opening for a couple different ways for me. Brian, what'd you do to get better at Magic this week?
Other than playing and just getting a little bit more reps with the Eldrazi Tron deck, read a lot, watched a lot of Magic. I felt like, especially on the Legacy, and Sean, yes, I agree with you, it was really, really nice to watch some Legacy on a Thursday morning into an afternoon. I felt like I was on vacation as I was sitting at home. This is what I kind of took away. You can have really, really lean mana bases and have really, really powerful decks. Now, everybody's out there saying, well, duh. But I feel like with some of the bigger mana strategies that I've been playing as of lately, like the Eldrazi Tron, I kind of forget that putting 16 to 18 lands in your deck and making everything else just total gas is one of those tensions. I am always wanting to play both of those styles of decks. So I'm just glad Legacy is still around. As for getting better at it, I just can't wait to sleeve up some very, very small, really fast Legacy deck and have some reps with Legacy very, very soon. I think this Grand Prix just kind of reignited my love for that format. Not that it needed any help, just how much fun those guys were having, you know, slinging 2 and 3 spells a turn, the interactions that were going forward. So I would encourage anybody out there who has never played Legacy or has been away from it for a while, if you need to get back into it, take a look at some of the GP coverage. I thought it was fantastic. And some of the deck building ideas were just really, really spot on. And hope it ignites your passion for that format as much as it did mine.
Pick your weapon and practice before Eternal Weekend coming up at the end of October. After this week of Modern at the LGS, Rachel has requested that she start moving into some Legacy play. So we're going to put our toe in that water, so to speak, so that she won't be completely outclassed if she gets the chance to come with us to Eternal Weekend. Matt, what'd you do to get better this week?
You know, I actually read a lot of articles. I had a very light week because of my previous, the health problems I was having. So I did a lot of kind of like nursing myself back to health, you know, only limiting myself to 1 or 2 beers a night type of thing. I actually read a good article. Somebody on our local Facebook page was saying, "Hey guys, I just play EDH. I want to get rid of my fetches, my, a couple of my dual lands, this type of stuff. I could use the money and I feel like there's better alternatives out there, but what are the better alternatives?" I don't remember who it was. It might have been Jason Alt, but somebody had written a really, really in-depth post, and it was transferred into an article about budgets, EDH, and commander cards. Even looking through a combination of looking through that and looking through a lot of my bulk cards, I'm like, man, I forgot this card existed. Why does this card not get played? Why does this card not get played? I was also able to kind of go through and figure out, okay, like, is this good outside of EDH? Is this good of outside of, you know, modern or when it was in standard type of thing? So viewing a lot of older cards, I was like, man, I totally forgot this happened. Like, that actually helped quite a bit to be able to do all of that.
Brian, when Hurley said he was, quote, nursing himself back to health, was I the only one thinking of, like, an 80s movie comeback montage? Like, Steven Seagal's been shot, and now we have the music over montage of him working out, sort of nursing himself back to health before he can go after the bad guy. I mean, that's what I was thinking of, but in a much less dramatic or heroic fashion.
I thought you were going to say a much less manly way.
Well, the fact that, you know, his dumbbells would have been like a beer, you know, as he's nursing his stomach back to health is probably in the most Hurley fashion I could possibly imagine.
That's what we did this week with Magic. We hope you enjoyed it as much as we enjoyed sharing it with you. If you got anything you want to catch up with us about, you can always do it. All the contact information is posted with the show, and you can hit us up with a post on the Patreon page. For Matt and for Brian, I'm Sean. Oh, you brave soul. Thanks for joining us for this week's Tryhards.